It's adventure. We really do want God's blessing and energy where you're headed. Let's talk a minute. Let's see if we can take a few minutes, not like a teaching time, because then we could illustrate more and be more about this, but in a few minutes here, let's see if we can answer a couple of big questions. And it's going in conjunction with what we've been talking about for a few weeks in the desire on God's heart for us to connect with each other, for us to learn to care and be practical and part of. So let's start in the Gospel of John. Remember, there are 21 chapters in John, and at the end of the book, he writes that if you could write down everything Jesus did, everything he said, everything that went on around his life, all of the books in the world wouldn't contain it. What a statement. Where there is such an amazing richness to watching the life of Christ and listening to the teaching and seeing the examples and seeing the interactions. Now, there's John's perspective 60 years or so after he lived it with Jesus. Now, 21 chapters, and he's trying to capture something that he says the whole world's books couldn't even do anything with. So it's an amazing thing to me to think that he spent 5 of those 21 chapters on one evening. I mean, stop and think about that a minute. That there is one little segment of a few hours where John says, here is something so important and so dynamic and so earth-shattering, life-changing, we are going to seriously look here. So in your Gospel of John, you know that chapters 13, 14, 15, 16, 17 are all about just a few hours. And I want to start us thinking this morning with ideas that come from those hours. Now, as you think of those, there may be some very familiar passages, familiar truths that you'd, oh yeah, that one. Oh yeah, he washed the disciples' feet. Oh, and there really is just an abundance of richness. But I want to begin with, as he is introspectively looking ahead into these disciples' lives, into the centuries, into our lives, you start with John 16, verse 33. The first half of it's on the cover of your bulletin. There's just an alert, a recognition, a kind of a gut check finality where Jesus says to us, in this world, you will find trouble. It's the reality of life. Now, he goes on to say, don't lose heart. And he's going to want to take the message of what he's already been modeling into, I've overcome it. In this life, you will find trouble. Now, it's an American thing to want to dodge it, want to sidestep it, want to buy our way out of it, want to seek the comfort levels that will always be trying to jockey around the truth that life is hard. And we make choices and choices and choices and choices, always trying to see, how do we miss it? How do we live at the highest comfort level? How do we live with the most stuff? How do we live And we've still got to come back to the fact that in this life, you will find trouble. Now, go back to chapter 13, and there's a great statement. If you've got your Bible, turn to it. It's verses 34 and 35. A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another, even as I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this, all men will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another. You ever catch that idea that it shouldn't come across as something, a new commandment I give you? Seems to me that that's been God's message throughout Scripture. He's all about love. God is love. God is about the intimacy of connecting and being united and all the things that are richly embracing His character. But Jesus has got a new commandment. And I think that one of the things He's reaching for is something that you and I could consider this morning. If we're on the faith journey, if we're in some process, step by step by step by step, maturing in how we know God, maturing in what we know, maturing in the depth of character and value system and practicality that will come out of faith, how do you measure it? How do you know if you're maturing? I don't know what's coming to your mind right now. I've been confronted with a question that I'd like you and I to ask. However you do measure Christian maturity, however you do, how can you do that without the Pharisees winning? Is it all just about the disciplines and the knowledge and the study? How do you measure maturity and the Pharisees don't win? A new commandment I give you, that you love one another as I have loved you. God's eternal message wrapped up into be united, be committed, be connected to each other in a way that demonstrates something going on inside that God impacts. What if maturing faith, what if your journey, what if it's all about your behavior? It's nice to know things. It's nice to have studied. It's nice to be, but it's all about what you're doing. Love each other as I have loved you. We've been talking about connecting. We've been talking about how can we as a church family be something and really meet each other heart to heart? But as Jesus is giving a new commandment, you know, your mind is probably already going to different places where this love has been modeled, where it's been described well, where it's been taught about. If you turn to 1 Thessalonians 4, you'd find a commendation where the Apostle Paul is talking to the little church in Thessalonica, and he's just telling them, hey, you got it right. You're doing it. You are doing God's heart. 1 Thessalonians 4, 9. Now, as to the love of the brethren, you have no need for anyone to write to you. For you yourselves are taught by God to love one another. For indeed, you do practice it toward the brethren, who are all in Macedonia. But we urge you, brethren, to excel still more. They're getting it. There's no fussing. There's no, we need to add this. You got to be a little more over. He's just excited about it with them. You're doing it. Whatever this maturing in your life is about, you're living it. You're treating each other, and God smiles. You're connecting with each other, and you get it. I'm excited for you about it. That's Paul's word there. If I turn to 1 Peter, I'd find in 1 Peter 1, and I've written these verses down for you in the notes in the bulletin. If you want to go back and kind of look at them all together for you, there's a list of stuff in there. In 1 Peter chapter 1, you're going to find that as I would open myself to God's truth, that God's truth positions me to reach out in love and not be so self-absorbed. As I interact with, as I listen, as I study, as I memorize, as I do those things that the Pharisees decided that's what it's all about, is just the disciplines. But if I'll position myself in truth, God will meet me and love will work. It will become very practical. Now, you want to find a little short verse? In Hebrews chapter 13, verse 1. Verse goes like this. Let love of the brethren continue. That's it. Once you're on the road, once you're connected at all, once you're involved with God's truth, once you're about this, then don't let anything put the fire out. Never let your practical love fail. So the first connecting point that we would consider today is the fact that love, when it becomes practical, is encouraging. Are you an encourager? Do you need encouragement? Mark Twain wrote once, he said, I can live for 2 months on one compliment. Kind of a interesting take there to begin with. But if I turn to Romans 12 and I look at verse 10 there, I find that God's on this subject of encouragement because he's alerting me to the fact that love creates a perspective in me and it creates an attitude in me to encourage. When I was 24, Young Life moved me to Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and I went to like a foreign country called South Louisiana. A culture like you can't believe. And in South Louisiana, at Broadmoor High School, I found a young guy in the midst of meeting quite a few folks named Bobby Gotro. I just kind of, just to show you a little bit about this culture, how do you spell Gotro? G-O, go T-R-O, right? No. G-A-U-T-R-O. E-A-U-X. Gotro. You know where the X, why the X is there? Obviously, Gotro is French. And way back when, there was the Gotro family, the G-A-U-T-R-E-A-U, but they could write. So when they signed a document, they signed it. But when the Gotro family that couldn't write signed a document, they just put the X. So their name had the X at the end, so you'd know, oh, that's the Gotro that can't write. So Bobby Gotro was a young kid at Broadmoor High School. And I'm coming from California going, what the heck is this? They can't spell, they talk funny, you can't understand anything they're doing. But I watched the dynamic of Bobby Gotro, who's a kid that I didn't know anything about his family, but I learned, and a math teacher. And what I discovered after watching a little while was Bobby Gotro was an incredible athlete and got the mind of a four-year-old. Just wasn't interested in studying, wasn't interested in learning anything, but boy, could he play football. And I found that this math teacher knew way more about Bobby than I did, because this math teacher knew that Bobby's family really wasn't a family, that dad was hardly ever around, and mom spent most of her time drunk, and there was no family life. And Bobby struggled with trying to make anything work as a 15-year-old that could run and carry a football. And so Joe befriended him, encouraged him. More afternoons than not, the math teacher went to football practice just to watch Bobby, just to be there and yell. Go, attaboy, you're doing it, you're doing it. And really connect with him and encourage him and be there in a way that nobody else in Bobby's life was willing to do. Did Joe love Bobby? I found out Joe is a Christian. Joe gets maturing faith. So his voice became so pivotal in all of Bobby's life, not just football. Because what Joe did as the math teacher to Bobby Gotro was to create a bridge that let faith be known, that let learning become more alive, that told Bobby, you can trust an adult. And there was great encouragement. Now, I'm not saying anything new to a lot of us in the room, and we heard a heart a minute ago. You want to hear stories? Talk to Pete. Talk about an encourager. But see, that's God's heart, to reach out and to touch and to connect in a way that's going to encourage. See, I'm like you. I'm used to hearing voices that come from three different directions. One is that positive, constructive, you can do it, attaboy. Remember in 1 Corinthians 13 where the Apostle Paul says, love is constructive. It looks to build up. See, I've heard voices, though, that also are on the other end. Only time I ever hear anything come out of that mouth is to criticize, to point out something wrong. And then I get a bunch of this silence. No voice at all. And I look for the fact that Jesus looked at those disciples that night and says, I'm giving you a new commandment in Mountain View Church. This is going to be way out in your centuries too. I want you to love each other practically. I want you to love each other and be encouraging. You look today, just today. You can look tomorrow too if you want. See how many encouraging words you hear. See how many encouraging actions come your direction. You might also just kind of check out how many come out of you. Think of the different ways that Christian people could encourage each other. With money, with time, with words, with help, with actions. We gotta so hurry. If I encourage, I'm imploring, I'm supporting, I'm exhorting, I'm energizing, I'm brightening. Hebrews 3:13. There's another place. You're just going to have to go look for it later. If I went to the cemetery and I were able to look into the lives that were represented in graves, and I asked the question, how many dreams, how many achievements, how many goals never materialized in those lives from lack of encouragement? I bet it's phenomenal. I'll bet it's phenomenal. Romans 15:5 will tell you that when people are connecting and they're gathering together and they really are loving each other, that God provides the encouragement. God will work through that posture. God will live in that attitude and He will be about it. That's His deal. It's His heart to encourage. And that's His call to the family. Encourage. Second point. Life is hard. There is trouble. There is travail. I want you to carry each other's burdens. I want you to support each other. Galatians 6:2. Bear one another's burdens and thus fulfill the law of Christ. I just read you the law. I'm giving you a new commandment. That's the law. Love each other. Bear one another's burdens and thus fulfill John 13, verses 34 and 35. Timmy Johnson was a little bitty guy in Bobby Gotro's class. Timmy Johnson was not an especially good athlete, but he wanted to be desperately. And I got to know Timmy Johnson, and once I got to know a little bit about his family, I realized he had an incredibly strong dad. We do not quit. We don't stop. We don't fail. And Timmy Johnson was a driven little guy. Excelled probably more than he would have without dad's drive, without encouragement, push, you know, somewhere in there. But when the time started that Timmy Johnson couldn't keep playing the sports because of the severe headaches, and he couldn't keep being active because something was really seriously wrong in his head, and as they began to check and diagnose, they found a tumor that the doctors were saying that this is really not good. But Dad, there, we do not quit. We're going to lick this. We're going to fight this. We're going for this. Well, Timmy had the surgery, and it was a rough, rugged surgery. And they didn't give a good prognosis for recovery. And when I went to visit him in the hospital, I could hear Dad and I could see. And I'd look in Timmy's eyes and I'd see fear. I couldn't see that. Oh, yeah, we're going to lick this. And I realized Timmy and Dad weren't connecting. I don't know if it was Dad was so afraid. Timmy couldn't share his heart with his dad. So I looked for times after Timmy got out of the hospital, and I could sit with him alone. And I'd ask him questions about heaven, because I think that's where it's headed. And I'd ask about a God that would meet him there. And Timmy is able to share a little bit in his heart, in his fears and his struggles. And when he died a month later, I knew that we had walked a little bit of road together, and that there had been some sharing and bearing of burden. There was a connection that love let him walk beside. Could I take about 6 or 7 more minutes and we do communion next Sunday? Would that be all right? Is that like legal? I don't Dave's gone. I don't know what you're supposed to do here. I don't want to bypass it, but I also am trying to be aware of our time. Could I do that? Is that okay? Okay, I see at least 2 of the elders saying okay, so. What is it to bear one another's burdens? What does the burden look like? How heavy is it? How awkward is it? What if the emotional burden of a failed morality? What if you could see it? Would it be this big, giant sack of smelly stuff that you had to hold and walk with and somehow still do your life? What would the burden be if it's just excruciatingly hard financial problems? What's that burden look like? How heavy is it? You think in your life a moment. What are some of the burdens? As I know enough stories in here to know, it's formidable for some. It's hard to even have the opportunity to talk about those burdens, isn't it? If I were to invite us all as you sit right here, turn to your neighbor and share your hardest burden.
It would stay pretty quiet in here. But, oh Lord, don't we need it? Don't we hear Jesus looking at the crowd and the poor and hard living, and he looks at them and says, "Come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest." There's got to be some way for people to connect enough together to have the safety of sharing and bearing. Jared and I just went to a conference. We're going to be so much smarter than we used to be. You wait and see. We sat in breakfast in a little Holiday Inn Express thing, and I'm sitting facing Jared, and right behind Jared, there's a mom with two little bitty kids, little bitty frappers, and mom has got this look on, okay, they're eating. I get a few moments of, and then the little bitty girl took the last half of her plate of stuff and put it on her head. And so now there's little pieces of scrambled egg and stuff, and the little guy is, it's so funny, it's so funny. And you could just see, Mom, that's just wrong. My mind went immediately to 1983, and I had just had my second knee operation and about 4 days before it, and had the long splint and on crutches, and in the Memphis airport with my wife and Robbie, who is 3, and Rachel, who is 1.5, and all the stuff and all of our luggage, and we're trying to catch a plane. This sounds wonderful, doesn't it? We get to the plane. We get on the plane. We're finally seated. You know how planes are. Everybody's here. Everybody's doing this stuff. And so I'm doing everything I can to try to help Robbie stay entertained. Back then, they used to feed you. And halfway through the flight, there's food and stuff, and they put peas on his plate. What were they thinking? I realize when I start hearing comments behind me that Robbie is now taking his spoon and holding it and putting a pea in the spoon and going, tink, and there's a pea launching over, and you know, it just disappears. It's kind of cool, and I'm starting to hear the comment. And so we're trying to calm it down. Rachel has decided that she can't stand it anymore, so she's walking up and down the aisle. She's watched the flight attendant. She's walking up and down the aisle. Her head is right even with the armrest. And she's walking up and down the aisle like she's putting something in everybody's seat. And as she gets back to the plane, I hear the snickers. I hear the laughs. I'm thinking, well, at least she's gone. Because I'm thinking the flight attendants are going to come out and they're going to be saying, asking, well, could you ask the kids to play outside, please? Some guy says, oh, it'd be great to have 2 kids. We're frantic. I'm thinking, oh, yeah, that's tough. You know what? You don't have any kids? No, we have 5. It'd be great to have 2. See, that was kind of an awkward, exciting, very memorable moment. 2 weeks ago was the 21st anniversary when we buried Robbie. And the burden killed us off. I didn't know any better. But my wife and I, married for 20 years, We're dead in the water. And the Christian community around us was so afraid of the situation and afraid of the feelings and afraid of the stuff that they just pushed us out. And we died. There was no burden carrying in our lives. Well, I've lived with that death. You considered it when I was coming here. How can a divorced guy be a pastor? See, Jesus was right. You will find trouble in this world. Freddie and Linda Floor know that. You know it as you care for aging parents. You know it as you wrestle with a health issue of your own or in your family. Or you know it in the uncertainty of an economic time, the uncertainty of the fear of, the frustration of, the disappointment of. I mean, it's like the tsunami, potentially. And God sat with his disciples in those hours that those five chapters look at, and he said, it's going to be there. And I want you to hear a new commandment. I want you to love each other. I don't want you just dressing up and acting church. I want you to encourage. I want you to bear each other's burdens. It's hard to bear another's burdens. It's hard to share it in the first place. Beth and I are so grateful to the bearing of burdens here that we have been the recipients of. A year ago tomorrow, daughter Kelly she was just obliterated in a head-on car wreck, and you heard about it with us. And while Beth spent 3+ months down in Atlanta, you walked with us, you prayed, you helped. You fed me some while she was gone. Thank you, Coy. I know what it's like to have the practical love when the burden is heavy. I want all of us to know that. I want there to be in each of our lives a connection of people that will say, we're there. We'll celebrate with you. We'll enjoy with you. But when life is hard, we're there. That's God's heart. We're not starting a program in the church. We're not trying to do something that's got some... We're trying to help us hear either new commandment I give you. I want you to love each other. We're going to pursue this and pursue this and pursue this. We each need to encourage and be encouraged. We each need to share and bear. And we need the fellowship that will get us there. I really am stopping now. Thank you for patience. You hear me? We We need this. Pray with me. Father, as you look into each of our lives right now, I know you will see places that where we each need encouragement. And I know that we are either in them or we are just coming out of them or they are just around the corner where there will be burden to share. Would you draw us together truly as a church to hear your commandment that you said was new? We want to obey you. Please make love practical in and with each of our lives. Father, that is my heartfelt plea. Thank you for dear people. Thank you for what you're doing in each of us as life is hard. Help us be your church. In Jesus' name, amen. Stand with me, please.